With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But once someone starts to turn into a mosquito, then it's all over.
Then it's all over, yeah.
Once a mosquito corrupts your soul, you become a mosquito.
War Boys here. Welcome to the show. We're talking more Magic the Gathering lore by... A wave of requests. I was a deluge of requests from one person in particular who asked me to do more magic episodes. So I decided I'm going to go ahead with that person's recommendation and not listen to anybody else, including my inner doubts. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me today is Peter O'Donohue. Say hi, Pete.
Oh, hey. I was trying to see if I can do a samurai topknot yet, but I cannot. My hair is still too short.
And James, how's your samurai topknot coming?
It's pretty good. My hair is getting longer. I cut it once during COVID. Ethan, I want to actually mention something. I found it weird that everybody asking for the Magic the Gathering episodes, it was from an email from a person named Nathan Balmer.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's a very common name, Nathan Balmer. It's actually, you know, Forbes lists it 40 under 40 top 100 names, so... So quite,
you don't
quite
find popular. It suspicious at all that it was from loreboyspodcast2@gmail.com, our alternate email account that we all have access to?
No, I think a lot of fans would probably have access to our alternate email account because that's what a true fan does, is they hack into our systems to send us fan mail, honestly. So none of this is surprising or even incriminating in any way to me, so I think we could just get started with the episode. I guess for anybody new to the show, welcome. So nice to have you. Have a seat. Here's a bag of Sprite. We're going to be talking about Magic the Gathering, but this is the part 5 talking about Magic the Gathering. So I would go back and look at our other MTG Elspeth episodes if you're curious about listening to this episode, because this one really will be the most confusing out of the 5 if you haven't listened to the previous episodes. But we'll try and make it as not mandatory as possible by starting the show off with a quicker recap. If you guys want to stay up to date on what episodes are coming out when, and if you guys want to hit us with some requests, be your own Nathan Balmer, if you will, then I encourage you guys to go to loreboys.com/about and follow the link there to our Discord, where we have a lore request channel where we write down all your requests. I promise you that. I do not promise you that we'll ever get to them.
I actually did write them down in the Reminders app on my phone. Which is kind of even more out of sight and out of mind than a paper would be, because it takes up it occupies no physical space. I was thinking, just when you were saying that, be your own Nathan Balmer, I was like, what? It's like if Ethan started like a libertarian cult like Ayn Rand did and just had t-shirts. It's like, who is Nathan Balmer? Sending mysterious emails from a fucking island.
Yeah, we'll all wear Guy Fawkes masks and we'll meet every Wednesday, because that's my really only free day of the week. Although these days I'm playing a lot of Deep Rock Galactic on Wednesdays, so maybe not, you know.
That game is like surprisingly good. I didn't expect it to be as good as it was.
So I super tangent, but if you like Left 4 Dead and you like I guess Minecraft to a certain extent, a lesser extent, if you like the mining aspects specifically of Minecraft and you like Left 4 Dead, check out Deep Rock Galactic. It's like a 4-player co-op game.
You get to be dwarves on a planet just sent underground. There's waves of bugs, yeah. And like you get to mine stuff. There's character progression. You get different guns that you can unlock. You can upgrade the guns. You can upgrade your character with perks. It's really tight. If there is lore, I would love to do it.
I think, and I said this the last time we were playing with our other friend Bobby, that I think the lore is going to be like The Legend of Zelda, where it's like there's so much in the game that would make you think that there's more lore, But as soon as you look into it, you're like, nope, that's it. They just put a bunch of obscure shit in the actual game itself and didn't flesh any of it out, which is fair because they're, I think, a smaller company and you only have so much time on your hands, right? But that's not what we're talking about today, JD.
Same with us. We only have so much time on our hands, so we better get into this episode.
We better get into this episode, huh? I mean, money, yeah. You know, time is money, friend, huh?
Yeah, that's what the goblins say in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, and that's what the dwarves think at Deep Rock Galactic. So, yeah. There are dwarves in the Magic the Gathering canon, but we're not going to be talking about any of them. We're going to be talking about Elspeth, a hero or planeswalker from an unknown plane. Eventually found her way to Alara. They've been on a mission to find someone named Karn, who they're pretty sure might be the key to beating the Phyrexians back. He did help to do it on Dominaria, after all, by sending himself back in time with a bomb to a school or something. I don't even remember our first episode on Karn.
Yeah, there but was a something wizarding like that. School that got blown up and Karn was there and they trusted the Phyrexians.
Something.
Two kids got killed or trapped in time for centuries or something.
Exactly. Joyra and Teferi.
That's it.
And his dad... Urza, Karn's dad, Urza, was the one who defeated, you know, Dr. Phyrexia, Yawgmoth himself, so.
Right. His dad is like, he's like the Geppetto to Karn's Pinocchio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What's the nose? What's Pinocchio's nose in there?
The time rifts that opened up above Dominaria and threatened to destroy the entire plane. Just like if Pinocchio ever told so many lies, he would fill the universe and it would collapse on itself. His nose would create all mass in the universe because it creates mass from nothing, right? So if he told an infinite amount of lies, he would, in theory, destroy the universe. Pinocchio lore coming up next week.
Pinocchio's nose would eventually go over the horizon of the Earth since it's curved and start poking out into space.
Or would it poke him in the back of the head?
I mean, it would have to curve, right?
Oh, because it's not curved, you mean.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, it would poke him in the back of the head then.
If it were curved,
If it were curved.
Well, if it was straight. Well, it depends on what you think about the universe, I guess.
Yeah, true. When you boils down to it, it's like those rams whose horns like grow in a curl and then grow through their own skull into their brain
and
killing
kill them.
It was a defect that that Geppetto never foresaw.
Yeah, Pinocchio constantly needs to chew on wood to like buffer down his nose so it doesn't stab him in the back of the head and kill him.
So on the last episode specifically, the fourth episode, we talked about the plane formerly known as Meriden. It's been infected, twisted into a horrible facsimile of the original plane of Phyrexia. Meriden's core...
New Phyrexia, baby.
New Phyrexia is what they're calling it. They're good at a lot of things. Coming up with creative new titles is not one of them. Meriden's core, kind of the center of the planet, the central the base of operations, in the Dark Knight, the second Batman movie, all the TV screens that he has in his basement. That's how I kind of think of Meriden's core, where Karn at one point would sit there and just observe the plane, and then Memnarch after Karn left would sit there and just observe the plane. It was corrupted by the glistening oil that was spreading, led by the inebriated Memnarch, the son of Karn, who broke into dad's liquor cabinet and drank Lovecraftian horror juice, essentially.
That is how the first time I got drunk went, actually.
So I'm sure we talked about that the last time we talked about Memnarch breaking into his dad's liquor cabinet, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
we all talked about the first time we got drunk. I remember it.
Yeah. So that's a brief touch on the last episode. Do you guys want to try and fill in the blanks on the first three episodes we did before then, or...?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. Then we'll just
I mean, I can take a quick stab at it if you want.
Yeah, of course, please.
So Elspeth ended up on a shard of Alaria that I do not remember the name of. I know Bant. One of them is called Naya. Sorry?
Bant,
right. I knew one was Naya because it's the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bottled tap water. Okay. And then after the shards all started to converge at some point, and like differently aspected monsters, so like red, blue, black, started to kind of pour into Bant, and she helped fight them away. And then Johnny showed up. He fell out of the sky. He's a lion man and also a planeswalker. And then we did an episode about him and how his tribe of lion people kind of had like a weird political problem, but it turns out they were being manipulated by something more evil.
Yep.
I think, and then we shifted again to Venser, who was like this creepy hermit who was doing experiments with Phyrexian garbage that he didn't really know was pure evil, and then built some kind of teleportation device that I don't remember the name of, and they went through the core of the planet and popped out on the other side. And then the other episode you did was about like the culture of the Phyrexians and like their Thanes, who I think are like the high lords of the robot people. And like their particular aspects and their like tribal politics or their like class politics that they would get into, because I know there was like some that had multiple characters that were all in charge with like a queen, and then there were some that were, they all have different attitudes, basically.
Yeah, exactly. The Greens were very much, hey, like, we have to fight and like kill each other because we need survival of the fittest. You know, Darwin was right. Where you also have the whites who are like, no, white is right, and it's like, yikes, they're the fascists, big surprise. And then, you know, the blues are like, oh, we need to do research and you know, experiment, and crazy experiments is how we're going to become the strongest race. But the Phyrexian directive is complicate everything, so turn everything into a Phyrexian and find perfection within the Phyrexians. But everyone has their own ideas on what perfection is and how to get there. The original Phyrexia didn't have different aspects. It was primarily black, which is just like death, destruction, break everything down, take the parts that we need, graft them onto us. Since they came to Mirrodin had five colors of mana, where the original Phyrexia didn't, and the five colors of mana have kind of driven these evolutions in different directions, which is what we talked about last episode. Overall, that was an excellent summary, Pete. Any other individual details we'll probably get on as we go through this episode, so I encourage you guys to ask questions of stuff that you don't remember, you don't know what I'm talking about, because it's safe to assume that some of the listeners who aren't Darnell won't know what I'm talking about also. Hey, Darnell.
Where does magic come from?
Magic comes from within and from the power of friendship, mostly. No, magic in the Magic the Gathering universe comes from land. It comes from the planes themselves, and then different aspects of that plane. So life in a plane will produce a green type of mana. Order in a plane, so just, you know, taking all your ducks and putting them in a row, or anytime you build like a series of dominoes without knocking them over, that buffs up the white mana in the area, essentially.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the best way to eat a chili cheese dog?
Tongue out, for sure. You gotta tongue out to catch, because as you bring it to your lip, there's a good chance that some chili falls and lands on your tie or your pocket square, and you don't want that. Oh, yeah. So you have to have the tongue out to catch preemptive chili.
If you can curl the sides of your tongue up, too, into like a little trough,
ideal.
That's the best
ideal
way to do it.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah.
Okay, then you don't need to chew the chili. It just slides straight down.
Thank you, guys. Thanks.
Time is chilly, as we know.
Yeah. So at the end of, I think, our Venser episode, Elspeth, Koth of the Hammer, a native to Mirrodin who had found Elspeth, and Venser were traveling through the plane, and they'd gone through a bunch of like abattoirs and like weird Phyrexian experiment things, and they were, you know, battling their way. They emerged to the Furnace Lair. And they had someone with them who they found while they were kind of traveling through Mirrodin named Malira, who had the power to cure phyresis, which is the name of the disease that turns machines and organic tissue into Phyrexians, essentially.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the corruption from the weird slime that is corrupting everything, right?
There's a glistening oil, which
that's it, glistening.
Is like the... I guess the Toon Squad's Michael's secret stuff or whatever it's called, that gives the Looney Tunes superhuman abilities. This glistening oil would give the Looney Tunes horrible deformities and some mechanical parts.
But only if they believed it would.
Only if they believed it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's pretty much the summary, bringing us back up to where we are. They emerged at the Furnace Lair, something called the Quiet Furnace, which we talked about on last week's episode. It's the Red Line section of New Phyrexia.
Right.
It was led by a Phyrexian praetor named Urabrask, and Urabrask had banned all the other Phyrexian factions from coming to the Furnace Lair, saying like, hey, we do our work here, we provide services for all of you. They built like a lot of weapons and smelted a lot of metal that other factions needed, and said like, we'll do all that stuff for you, but you're not allowed to come Don't step on our turf, homie, okay?
Okay.
And they notice humans living there, and for one reason or another, listen to our last episode, they were okay with some of the lesser races remaining on New Phyrexia, essentially. So that's where the Moran resistance was based, was in the Furnace Lair. And they were welcomed when they arrived. They were welcomed as soon as, you know, the locals realized that Malira could cure this horrible disease that most of the people were afflicted by. They were like, hey, hell yeah, you can stay as long as you want. Malira healed those in camp affected by the glistening oil nonstop for several days while Elspeth sat with her in the tent speaking with her. They were kind of becoming friends, you know, swapping stories, swapping experiences. Malira eventually...
Talking over her, working seems annoying.
Yeah, exactly. So is it like draining while you're doing that, while you're doing surgery 18 hours a day? Is that exhausting for you? Or
hard.
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, I kill stuff, you know, mostly. I served as a paladin for a while, but are you busy? No, you don't.
Yeah, I really like to focus on this. This man's nerves are almost entirely connected to the metal sludge that is coursing through his veins right now.
Oh, metal sludge. You want to hear a story about metal sludge? I've dealt with it before, you know. So, like, where I come from, Bant.
Could you tell me just into 2 seconds here?
Yeah,
just, like, desperately trying to hold it together with, like, 2 calipers, just, like, shaking, is like, a bead of sweat on the tip of her nose, just like, oh, okay.
Oh, sure. I'll save that story for a little bit from now. I see you're sweating, and I sweat sometimes when I get involved in battle, you know? It's like, battle's
so... If you dab my forehead, I will let you keep talking.
Malira eventually is able to heal pretty much everybody in the Mirren camp. There is kind of a tipping point where... someone gets too afflicted by phoresis and it turns into a Phyrexian, essentially. Yeah, the guy who sung Happy there. Clap along if you feel that machine perfection is the truth. there is a tipping point where you just become a true Phyrexian and Malira can't, like, undo that. And we'll get into... the what and the why of that limitation in a bit. The spoiler alert is, like, if it gets the heart, you know, where the soul lives, then that's too far.
I see.
Malira can heal up to a point, but then once they've turned into a true Phyrexian, then it's like they're on their own. So she can't, like, go find Phyrexians out in the wild and be like, I'm going to cure you. But she can cure these people who are slowly transforming into Phyrexians.
It's like she can do the physical aspect of it, but she's not ordained, basically, so she can't do the spiritual correction to get rid of the Phyrexian garbage.
Exactly. Yeah. So she heals everyone in the camp, and the leader of the camp, or the de facto leader of the camp at the time, called a council to a town meeting. Town meeting, everybody's cured. We need a town meeting. So,
ding, 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 ding.
Exactly. He's like ringing a bell, like ding 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 ding, and then the bell's like, hey, I'm what are you doing? I'm a living being.
Oh, the bell of the Phyrexian. Or it just yells ding when he shakes it doesn't actually have a clapper.
exactly. So when the invasion of Mirrodin first happened, there was an elf named Izuri who had risen to the challenge of an invading horde of horrific monsters invading your home plane. I promise this episode isn't going to be another episode about a side character. This okay. is we're not going to talk about Izuri a bit, but only for the points of the story, because I think he is an interesting character, and he is there's 2 iterations of his card. So I think anytime you get a second card printed after yourself, you're doing all right as a Magic the Gathering character.
Yeah.
So the first iteration of his card is Izuri, Renegade Leader. He was maybe not the one you would expect to answer the call of a horrific swarm of micro machines coming to invade your home planet.
As soon as you get infested with the tiny plastic trucks, it's really hard to get them out once they've corrupted your soul.
Yeah. He was a bandit before the world went to heck. He made his living making he made an easy buck picking on the weak, picking on the downtrodden, picking on those lowly merchants who are traveling from town to town. There's a faction of people known as the Vedalken, and for a while he still holds the Guinness World Record for highest bounty ever placed on an individual. This Izuri fellow, just because of all the hoodwinking he did.
Okay.
When the world was threatened, though, he organized his fellow Viridian elves into groups that fought off the invaders, and he established refugee camps for humans fleeing the invasions. Eventually, the Viridian elves were beaten back. He led them to the treetops, where they held out as long as they could, until eventually they were removed even from the tallest treetops, essentially. So they were living in the green section of Mirrodin, but again, there's not really living resistance in any of the other layers on any of the other things. It's just in the Quiet Furnace. So eventually they made their way out of the green section, their home, their wood elves, to the furnace layer, where they joined up with the resistance.
Are they Viridian?
Viridian, like the color, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. It's like Pokemon.
Viridian City.
On the road to Viridian City.
Is Erica okay? Did Vile make it out of the Phyrexian Horde?
Stun Spore, Violet Blue.
Yeah. stand true. I choose you, Gingatax Jataxius, leader of the Progress Engine. I choose you. eventually they meet up with the resistance. They join their way. He takes on the role of leader at a certain point, and he's kind of, you know, like I said, de facto leader of this place. This is where Koth was from, and Koth was probably seen as a leader for a time as well. But Koth had to leave. He went in search of a way to stop the Phyrexians. Now he's back, baby. So this guy, Aruzi had called, or Azuri, sorry, had called the meeting, because once Malira had healed everyone in the camp, and our wayward questers, you know, Elspeth, Koth, and Venser were ready to once more search for Karn, Azuri approached Malira and asked her to stay. He's like, hey, you know what? You, have this magic ability, that lets you cure this sickness that, people come down with in the camp all the time. It's horrifying. Mutates them horribly. They become monsters. They go insane, and they try and kill everyone that they once loved. And Malira's thought about it, and she's like, you know what, though? Kind of like these new guys, I think I'm going to go with them. They might need my help.
They might need a chiropractor on the road, I'm just saying.
Yeah, exactly. What like if they...
Her name sounds like malaria, which is like another thing that she would probably have to fix.
she can cure two things, phryresis and malaria, because their name sounds like it.
But once someone starts to turn into a mosquito, then it's all over.
Then it's all over, yeah.
Once a mosquito corrupts your soul, you become a mosquito.
Not once they start to turn into a mosquito, but once they fully turn into a mosquito. Yes. Then she can no longer heal them. Yeah.
Yeah. Then the bats are after you because you look delicious.
So when Malira turns him down, you know, when Malira says, like, ew, I have a boyfriend. His name is Elspeth, okay? Azuri, his exploitative side from his bandit days, kind of shows its face. He was pretty intent on keeping Malira there through whatever means necessary. He knew there was still a risk of infection for people there, like I said. But he also really wanted the credit for keeping... Like, he didn't want to help people as much as he wanted to be thanked for helping people. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. You know? Of course. It's the... I don't want to get too conspiratorial. It's kind of the Bill Gates thing that's going on these days, right? Where it's just like, I'm a good man. I'm buying everyone's farmland and selling it back to them because I can manage it sort of thing. He wants to look like a good guy opposed to be an actual good guy.
Yeah,
exactly. Or you give $100 to a homeless person, but you make a YouTube channel to show the video of you giving $100.
Yeah, exactly. Make 15,000. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, hey, look, I know I could heal, you know, the 50 people that are here, but we have a chance of stopping the Phyrexian invasion. I have a chance to save like millions, if not billions of lives throughout the multiverse. He's like, yeah, but think about the optics for me. You know, it's an election season coming up. I got to think about, you know, the well-being of my constituents. Okay. So really, look, I can't go back to being a plumber. You know, like it's just, I haven't done it in years. I'd have to reapply for my journeyman status. It's a big thing. Okay. So yeah, we're gonna keep you here, and you're
it's
not
minority tribe. It's not even his choice when the election is. It's just like
yeah, exactly. So he's like, no, we're gonna keep you here. He's loath to give up his newfound power and respect. He was hoping to become more influential by keeping her around, but he wasn't quite ready to square off against the planeswalkers. So as soon as Malira went and got her boyfriend Elspeth, you know, she gave a small show of power, and he was just like, oh, wow, you guys are like really strong, huh? Okay, I'm gonna leave you alone. And just then, the camp was attacked by Phyrexians. Whether they were, you know, not Urabrask's red aligned Phyrexians of the Quiet Furnace faction, and they were, you know, like an invading other force that was breaking the rules that Urabrask had set down, or whether they were like rogue red Phyrexians, you know, who decided to attack the camp is unclear. But they get attacked by these Phyrexians. He kind of gets separated, gets driven out of the camp. So they're like, well, that's a problem solved, because we were going to have to, you know, deal with the politics of that. But it seems just like the politician was run out of town by a group of rabid coyotes. So, which, if could happen more in real life, I'd be very down. But
let's run them out of town on the rails. Yeah. But it's like a meat train made of Phyrexian material. Yeah,
exactly.
I'd love like an art piece of Bernie Sanders fighting off a pack of wild coyotes.
Pack of wild coyotes, yeah.
Wearing his mittens and everything. Yeah. Be sick.
it's like the sunblock girl, but it's like a coyote biting his mittens off instead of the lower half. Yeah.
The coppertone girl.
Coppertone? Yeah,
yeah. Coppertone. Yeah, the coppertone girl.
isn't that like a famous person? I feel like that's like.
I think she's famous now because she's been the Coppertone girl for a century.
It was Betty White when she was younger.
Was it Betty?
Yo, White? Young Betty White was fine, though.
Okay, wait.
I have no idea.
Peter, we're talking about a baby on a sunscreen bottle. Please don't say she was fine.
No, young Betty White was 22.
We're talking about a baby on a sunscreen bottle, damn it. Anyway. Azuri, the coyotes are eating his mittens. He's got a thing. He also, Venser and Elspeth also gave him a little demonstration of their power, and he was like, I'm not able to fight you guys anyway. Eventually, he does get captured. He gets complicated by the Phyrexians. He turns from Azuri Renegade Leader into his other card, Azuri the Claw of Progress.
Oh, that's a spooky name. I don't like that at all.
The Progress Engine is the Blue Line faction led by Jin Gataxius. Had turned him into an agent of Phyrexia's will. As the Claw of Progress, he now seeks to extend the Phyrexian's gift of perfection to his former allies. So even he is not immune to horrible meat monsters that will butcher you and turn you into other things.
Anything that calls itself the Progress Engine is probably not doing the best thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's a seriously, seriously dystopian sci-fi name right there.
Well, it's funny because the blue-aligned intellectual Phyrexians were very much the by any means necessary kind of guys, which, as we've established 100 times in this show, by any means necessary is always a setup for a villain.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, we kind of had this discussion on last week's episode about Battletech, where I said the people that left the inner spheres to go to the deep periphery were the bad guys because they left with all the best and brightest minds. But it's kind of a morally gray thing, right? I don't think saying the Phyrexians are the bad guys in the Magic the Gathering universe is in any way morally gray.
I mean, the Phyrexians being evil is not controversial whatsoever because they're not. They're not people. Exactly. They're like a mercury-colored sludge that like modifies everything it touches.
Exactly.
Opposed to people who just got fed up with kings and queens.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the DLC coming to Magic, by the way. You got the blue magic, you got the red magic, you got the black magic, you got the morally gray magic.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. The gray color.
Yeah.
I play this card, killing in self-defense.
Yeah. So there is, and I've mentioned this on past Magic episodes, but there is colorless mana, which is a specific color of mana. Like there is a gray color mana, which is colorless mana, and it is a specific color of mana.
Okay.
It's usually used to, if you have Eldrazi, which are the Eldritch Horrors, Lovecraft Abominations, you need to spend a colorless mana plus any other color of mana, or like six other colors of mana to cast them or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're not wrong.
I play Florida. I tap Florida and play Stand My Ground Law. Yeah. I shoot your planeswalker in the back when he's trying to jump off my balcony.
Exactly. So what happens next was a little confusing for me in researching. I haven't read the book. The book in question is Scars of Mirrodin, The Quest for Karn. By all accounts, it's a very bad book. So I have no plans on reading it either. But basically what happens next is after the attack of the Phyrexians on the Mirran resistance camp, they find a guide. I could find nowhere that explicitly told me who this guide was. And like I said, I wasn't willing to buy a book that I wasn't planning on reading just for this one specific detail.
Dude, it was just gamefaq.com with all the ASCII art, and it was 50 pages.
They printed the game fac, yeah. I think this is a guide of Tezzeret, or sent by Tezzeret, and we'll get into why I think that. Tezzeret, we mentioned on the Venser episode when they first arrived in New Phyrexia, also had sent them guides before. He sent them a guide to get them here to the Furnace Lair, and through, you know, a couple meat abattoirs and things like that. Down the meat shaft, okay, they had a guide sent by this guy named Tezzeret, who at the time I said I could get a full episode. We'll go into him a bit today, but he could also get a full episode at a future date.
I love the phrase meat abattoirs, by the way.
I say meat abattoir. I think meat might be redundant, though. It's like saying tuna fish, right? Like,
right,
you don't need to say the fish part, but sometimes you say it. Because, like, I don't think there's another type of abattoir other than one that deals with meat, right?
Yeah. And you wouldn't say like a can of, or like you buy some chicken bird breast either.
Chicken bird.
Chicken bird.
Yeah, but, I don't know. Meat abattoir, it sounds beautiful. It's like cellar door or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Meat
okay.
abattoir.
The meat abattoir. You know?
Oh, yes,
it's why don't we go relax in the meat abattoir? Oh, I think so, Duchess.
Sit down in my chaise lounge, medium rare.
Okay, so all to say, they have a guide who's willing to take them to the core, where they think that Karn might be. That's where they've been trying to get, right? When they arrived at the Furnace Lair, they were like heading for the core. So they continue to ascend through the spheres of New Phyrexia. They also continue to uncover more horrific aberrations. They get into a fight with two Phyrexian angels, which probably hits pretty close for Elspeth, because like Pete, you said, she's from the Shard of Bant, which was ruled by angels. She's, you know, known angels most of her adult life. She was born on a plane and completely overrun by Phyrexians, but the first place she knew as home was ruled by angels, and she probably knew a couple angels in her life.
These Phyrexian angels, are they corrupted by the ooze, or are they just like horrifying copies? Are the Phyrexians, did they build angels that had been described to them over the phone? Basically,
I'm gonna guess both to some extent. Okay. So we talked about Memnarch building soul traps to bring planeswalkers in from other planes, and he brought a bunch of living creatures from other planes to try and produce planeswalker sparks so Memnarch could become a planeswalker. Someday I'll do a Glissa episode as well, which we'll talk about Glissa even less than Tesseract on this episode, but we'll talk about Glissa killing Memnarch. And Memnarch, at this point in the story, Memnarch is dead. Memnarch is no longer on New Phyrexia, but Memnarch kind of set up New Phyrexia to be what it is. I believe I mentioned it in the Venser episode that Glissa does someday kill Memnarch. I don't know if I set up the timeline to make it clear that Memnarch is no longer... Memnarch is dead at this point.
Does Glissa have anything to do with Glizzy's?
Glizzy McGuire? Yeah, it's okay. Glizzy McGuire's cousin, actually.
Dude, I would watch Glizzy... Lizzie McGuire, but she's a hot dog.
Oh, I see.
It's like the Sausage Fest starring Seth Rogen, not set in the Lizzieverse.
Could be. I haven't seen much of either, so I can't rule it out.
I'm pretty sure Gordo was a planeswalker, and then whoever the girlfriend is a Phyrexian.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
That was the point. That's why when Lizzie McGuire does Paris, or whatever the fuck that movie was called, she falls in love with Gordo. It's because
Lizzie McGuire does Dallas or something. Yeah.
But she was actually into a hot dude named Ethan, I think, right?
Oh. So, no, yeah. His name was Nathan. Nathan Balmer.
Nathan Balmer.
Who is Nathan Balmer?
All of Ethan's shadow economic policies.
So these creatures, these angels, whether they were captured angels who were, you know, infected with glistening oil. What I'm willing to bet is some were captured angels infected with glistening oil. Then they saw those ones. They said, well, we could make more of those, and then made those horrible reproductions on their own also, kind of, okay. You know. They were defeated by Elspeth, but the group would kind of hit a breaking point here. Koth of the Hammer, this is his home. He's probably pretty fed up of seeing, you know, creatures overrunning it and everybody he knows being at constant risk. So he gets frustrated. He'd been forced to leave the people that he'd sworn to save in an effort to find Karn. And it's starting to feel like for him that they're never going to find Karn. They're just going to find more and more awful Phyrexians the deeper down they go. Phyrexians all the way down, essentially. So he doesn't believe that they're going to find him anymore. Or maybe he doesn't believe that finding him would achieve anything. Maybe he's like, the infection is so bad, you know, I don't think Karn can save us. Like, he's a planeswalker, we're planeswalkers. If he can do anything, why aren't we doing something? Angry at their lack of progress, Koth takes Malira and leaves the group. So Malira, from what I could tell, doesn't have any agency. She just goes where a powerful people tell her to go. And she's like, okay, I just said that I definitely wasn't going to stay at the Moran Resistance Camp, but if you're going back to the Moran Resistance Camp, I guess you're right. I guess I'll come. So they leave. Elspeth and Venser are now on their own. They have their guide with them, sent by an unknown shadowy benefactor who wants to take them to the core. So they're kind of left with this decision, like, do we press on without him, or do we go back for him? They decide to go back for him, so they're like, let's split up. You know what? Let's not split up. We should probably stay grouped, you know?
Venser and Scoob, you go that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Daphne, Elspeth, and I'll go the other way.
Exactly, yeah. You guys go check out the basement. We're going to check out the master bedroom.
Freddy, just get shotgunned in front of a bunch of Phyrexians.
So they go after Koth, but they quickly get ambushed by a group of Phyrexians. The Phyrexians are like, look at these idiots. They split up. What a bunch of W's. Like, all it took was a couple Scooby snacks, and we broke the group apart. No problem.
Yeah, it was the corridor that's just all doors closed up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a run back and forth. They get ambushed. Elspeth goes into a battle fury. She wipes out the force in front of them entirely, utterly. But what's the problem with Phyrexians? They're an unceasing tide. They never end. So as soon as she, you know, explicitly said in the recap that she killed every single one of them, but then more of them showed up. So what are you going to do? Huh?
Keep killing them?
You keep killing them. You keep killing them until you can't anymore. That's exactly what Elspeth did. They continue to pour in, more and more of them appearing until the planeswalkers were eventually overwhelmed.
Do they bleed the glistening oil to create more Phyrexians? Is that the problem? Or are they just generated constantly by the different, like, forms of corruption?
A bit of both. I think it's like maybe they fight with their mouth closed kind of situation, because glistening oil so you don't get their blood in your mouth.
Their kids that, yeah. It's rude to fight with your mouth open.
Yeah. So Elspeth and Venser are fighting with their masks on, okay? They're being responsible. They're keeping 6 feet of separation while they're battling these Phyrexians. I mean, it's unclear. I think this is, you know, some liberties in the fiction, Pete, where, sure, glistening oil reproduces on its own, as we saw when it first overtook Phyrexia. It's, you know, Memnarch spilled one little bottle and it happened to grow to a point where it overtook the entire plane.
Yeah, he chemical X'd his Powerpuff Girls and then it took over the planet.
Exactly. And you know, they injected into creatures to turn them into Phyrexians.
Right.
In one way or another, whether it's just, you know, unclean tools that are, you know, covered in glistening oil, or they actually, like, use a syringe and inject them. Is
like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons would be like a Phyrexian surgeon in the furnace. It's like, what? I wiped them with my napkin.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Inflammable means flammable? What a country. Yeah.
Fantasy, baby. I can prescribe anything you want me to.
So Elspeth and Venser don't get infected while they're fighting these things, I guess. I thought the question that you were getting to.
It answered the question. It's all good, actually.
They do get kidnapped, for what it's worth, and they now we kind of see that they're clearly working under orders. They're not just like a mindless band come to kill these things. Like, they didn't just come across Elspeth and Venser and say like, oh, there's humans, let's kill them. We love killing humans, you know, because they take them alive, which is, you know, probably half cuz story and half for reasons. But whoever's orders they were under, well, I guess we'll get to in a sec. So they capture Elspeth and Venser, and they're headed back to their leader, whoever told them to go capture Elspeth and Venser. But the Phyrexians, for a change, didn't know what they were up against. They came across the greatest threat to a group of metal abominations. You guys want to take a crack at what that might be?
A giant magnet.
I was going to have... That was my idea, too. I don't have a second guess.
Great improv, Pete. No, it's even more deadly than a giant magnet. It's a door with a rounded handle. So, they're...
Oh, no, their Lego Man hands can't get around the knob.
Can't grab the knob. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
They do latches, no problem. But rounded handles, they don't seem to handle. So,
or they, if you have the like flat one that you could like just push it down with your machine stump,
exactly.
But like they actually have like a door knob that just they can't grab on.
Yeah, if it was a push or a pull, no problem. Automatic doors, beautiful.
So far, the Phyrexians have the same power to open doors as my dog does.
Yeah, exactly. So this part was weird for me again in researching. I couldn't find. What about this door stopped them? But everything I read, every source I found was like, they got stopped at a door. They were trying to figure out how to open a door. The door had them stopped. So I'm kind of picturing the Fellowship of the Ring entering Moria situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where they like they get to this place and like the lead Phyrexian is like, no, I can't remember the password, you know? Like,
I was thinking that it was just like a D&D check where everybody's rolling for traps, checking perception, and like taking forever. Just open the damn door.
Yeah. Well, no, it's one of those things where like the DM was like never said the door was locked, and the group is like, I want to pick the lock, and the DM's like, okay, roll sleight of hand, and then they roll, and they all just roll really bad. And it's like, yeah, you guys don't unlock the door. But nobody tries the handle to just see if it's unlocked.
All right, let's go back to the town. Like,
swinging saloon doors that neither hits the top of the building nor the bottom, so they can see both over and under and through it, and they're just like, ah!
So yeah, whatever happened, they took a wrong turn at Albuquerque and ended up in front of this door, because like, also, this is their home plane. I don't know why they took this route if they know that there's a door that they can't open on the way back, but... All of it unclear. if we want to say Loreboy's canon, and we want to give them the writer the benefit of the doubt, we'll say it was sabotaged by a rival faction, and we'll get into who the rival factions are in a sec.
Okay.
But really, to me, when I was researching this, it just seemed so silly that they couldn't open this. There was just like, and then they got to a door that they couldn't open. I was like, okay, sure. So while the group of machines stopped to ponder how to open this particular doorway, they dropped the captive planeswalkers behind them and turned 100% of their attention to the puzzle of the rounded door handle.
When did they turn into, like, the big guy from a Looney Tunes cartoon? where like, you don't move when I look, don't look at you sort of thing. Yeah. Just like, pardon me. And then they all just like furrowing their brows, sweating bullets, like trying to figure out how to open this fucking door.
Where's Elspeth and Venser? They're like being carried by this group of Phyrexians and they got stuck at the door? Or?
Yeah, so they're like hogtied by the Phyrexians and
on the sticks.
Yeah, the Phyrexians get to the door, put them down, and are now all like every single one of them standing there looking at the door essentially.
Okay. Venser just like filled the other room with water or something, and it's like really stuck. They're pretty magical people. Maybe they had something.
I don't see why not, James. You're making a good point. So the momentary distraction, however, of this door would allow Koth and Malira to sneak up and free Elspeth and Venser. They, maybe much like Elspeth, as soon as Koth and Malira had left, Elspeth was like, maybe we should stay grouped. Maybe Koth and Malira left, and Koth was like, maybe we should stay grouped. Or maybe they overheard the force that killed. Maybe they overheard the battle and said, like, oh, you know, we got to try and help them. Whatever it was, they were like, we got to try and help our friends, Elswith and Venser. You know, I might be mad that we haven't solved this Phyrexian issue, but I'm not willing to let them die for it.
Is the door just painted on?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's a real Looney Tunes situation where that dang Roadrunner. What are the Phyrexians is like, no, I just saw a Roadrunner run down here. I swear to God, guys. He's just standing there with a smashed nose. Like,
that's the other planeswalker that we're going to get into in the next episode is the Roadrunner.
The Roadrunner, yeah.
It's a Wall-E coyote, like a robot coyote.
Koth and Malira free Elspeth and Venser. By the time the Phyrexian realized what was going on, the companions were off running, you know what I mean? So there's no battle here. So they're peeling out. They're Tokyo drifting away. One thing is becoming pretty clear, though. Venser's strength is wearing thin. He's
not a planeswalker, right?
He is a planeswalker. He is the first of the new class of planeswalkers.
Oh, the Neo ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot about that.
His strength is clearly wearing thin. It seems, and we remember a bit about Venser. We did most of an episode on him. It seems that he had spent too much time working with power stones, and it was beginning to show. So you guys might or might not remember from the Brothers War episodes that power stones basically emit radiation and they make people extremely sick, where Yawgmoth and the Phyrexian blight originally came from. Was Yawgmoth recruited a bunch of people who were forced to live under a city powered by power stones who all got extremely sick from those power stones. He recruited a bunch of them to create Phyrexia, essentially.
So he's like an alchemist who played with too much mercury at this point.
He's exactly like that. So his home had been on Urborg beneath a time rift, and he'd whiled away his youth picking up pieces of uranium and, you know, tasting them. And, you know, like, what's the difference in taste between plutonium and uranium? Like, he used them to make machines. So he made the, before he could planeswalk, he made like the device to teleport himself, basically, because he hated his upbringing and he hated the place that he grew up. The longer he has spent at this point gallivanting about, plane shifting around, is it's taking a bigger toll on the latent radiation poisoning that he's taken.
Whoa, fuck me, Elspeth, man. I'm wiped. I need a couple of smokes. Just let me sit down. I don't feel so good.
Exactly, yeah. He's like scratching his arm. You got any uranium? Yeah, are you holding?
I'm wondering how they made craft dinner so fluorescent orange.
Yeah, exactly. It's all Venser. Yeah. Venser's great at two things. He's great at inventing devices. He's kind of an artificer, and he makes a mean box of craft dinner. He gets the perfect ratio of butter, cheese powder, and milk.
And milk. That's macaroni and cheese for our international folks.
Our American listeners primarily. But I was just about to do the same thing. I was like, oh wait, I think craft dinner is just a Canadian thing, but it's boxed mac and cheese. Very orange. So as they were trying to flee the Phyrexians, who are now chasing them, Venser's sickness was slowing them down. One of the great strengths of machines, of course, is good cardio. Machines don't really tire out so easily, right?
Oh, yeah.
So knowing they couldn't take the time to catch their breath, Venser comes up with the idea to show Koth how to make a bomb, essentially. He's like, hey, all the walls here are made out of metal. If we just infuse some magic into the proper organization of metal parts, it can blow this whole gosh dang tunnel up. And Koth is a geomancer, so he kind of sculpts metal and stone and things like that. So he's like, sure, like show me how to do it, and I'll do it. So Koth and Venser work together to build this bomb. And they blow up the tunnel, which buys them a bit of time. They know they don't have all day. They know the forces will eventually break their way through. And the forces are working behind them.
I like how they can get through a pile of fucking broken metal, but a door
was pretty confusing. Yeah, okay, like
you didn't think to use the drill shaped Phyrexian to get through the door they couldn't open.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they pretty much summon the drill shaped Phyrexian and the bulldozer Phyrexian and the pickaxe Phyrexian and just like go to town on it.
Yeah, we played too much bad rap.
One they forgot, they left behind.
It's like the Alanis Morissette song. It's like everything is a spoon when all you need is a knife. It's like everything is a hand that can grip a door handle. Or it's like everything is a pickaxe when all you need is a hand that can grip a door handle.
Yeah.
It's like pain.
So they're running. They're running.
It's like pain when you're walking through.
The Phyrexian force they'd been running from. I guess that had captured them and was bringing it to this person, decided to show herself, I think, telekinetically. I think she's, like, messaging them or something like that. But it's the woman named Glissa, who I mentioned now, and I mentioned on one of our previous episodes very briefly, who, again, could have her own episode. She's kind of one of the main characters in a book called The Moons of Mirrodin. She was once the guardian of Mirrodin. Like I said, she killed Memnarch when, you know, the inhabitants of Mirrodin kind of realized that Memnarch wasn't a good dude because he was capturing and torturing all these people, trying to turn into a planeswalker. Glissa killed him, but does eventually succumb to the Phyrexian infection. So she's a full-fledged Phyrexian at this point, and she's taunting the planeswalkers as they fled. Their rescue would come in an unlikely form. So this is when our party gets a first-hand look at the rivaling factions within the Phyrexian Whole. So we know from our last episode that there's, you know, the red, the white, the all the different colors of Phyrexia that all kind of operate on their own purposes. But there's also even kind of like sub-factions led by rulers to different extents. So the planeswalker Tezzeret had been born to difficult circumstances. Sometime after the mending of the Shards of Alara, which we talked about in the early Elspeth episodes, Tezzeret had been born to parents who didn't care enough for him to give him a name. He was born on the Shard of Alara known as Esper, and his parents were just like, yeah, your kid, your boy, you know, like Kratos' son, I guess.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Not having any real sense of familiar structure, it was his friends who would give him the name Tezzeret. Tezzeret, on Esper, where he's from specifically, is a native tongue. In his native tongue, is like an improvised weapon.
Okay.
They gave him the name after he stabbed an older kid who was bullying him.
I was gonna say, are there no bullies on Tezzeret on Esper? Considering they gave him the name Tezzeret instead of something that actual young boys would give to your friend as a name, is just like shitface or whatever. It's like, yeah, and the shitface shows up to save them from the Phyrexians.
it's like a language barrier thing. It's like they named him Shiv because he shivved a guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And a boner lord, like something reasonable that we would understand.
Exactly. So it was the death of Tezzeret's mother that would define who Tezzeret was more than his harsh childhood, even. He was begging in a slum of the city, or she was begging in a slum of the city, excuse me, when she was run down by a guildmaster's carriage, leaving Tezzeret and his father alone. His father was very physically abusive. So while the two of them were cleaning the corpse out of the street, his father imparted the seeds that would alter Tezzeret's worldview forever. His father said to him, "The strong rule and take whatever they can from the weak. And on Esper, there is no greater force than the mages." So with this simple declaration, Tezzeret's like, well, I'm going to become a fucking mage then. Like, why would I be one of the people that gets taken from rather than one of the people that takes, you know?
I thought he was going to stab all the mages.
Oh, yeah. then he boner boyed his dad. So the next day, he begins to help his father salvage metal from the cesspools, and he's like, hey, you know, yesterday I had this great idea to become a mage. Today, I found out I have a real talent for it. He was a natural talent in something called rhabdomancy, which gives him the ability to find metal more easily than his father. So he's like he's a great scavenger, essentially.
Oh, okay. So he walks around on a beach in front of an old guy and just yells beep very loudly.
Exactly. Rhabdomancy itself is the technique of divining by using a dousing rod. So like when you hear about somebody dousing, they're a rhabdomancer. And that this is like a real life thing. This isn't like a Magic the Gathering thing.
Okay.
Rhabdomancy is present in the Bible in a couple places. Depending on which version you find, it might not be written as rhabdomancy, but the actual
I wonder what the root rhabdo is. Like, I've never
I don't know.
Jamie, pull up the clip.
I didn't look that much into it. I did pull up the Wikipedia page to find out that, like, oh, it's in, like, you know, these different Bible verses. But anyway, so he's like, I have a knack for finding salvage. He's so good at it that his dad can quit his job, but he's just, like, stealing from his dad this whole time and saving up to go to an academy.
Also, he's stealing from his dad, opposed to, like, the child star thing that's the inverse.
Well, I mean, no, his dad is completely, like, his dad has stopped working and is just letting Tezzeret bring in the money, and then he's taking all that money. So he is doing that. Okay. But this is, like, a child star success story where he's like, but also, dad, fuck you. I paid for a lawyer who's emancipating me now.
And he
leaves.
Okay.
Ancient Greek rhabdos means rod.
Rod, there you go.
Well, that makes Mancy sense.
From the rod.
The tool of the dowsing is the dowsing rod.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tezzeret's like, hey, I'm pretty powerful. Eventually, he gets his Planeswalker spark. I will do an episode on Tezzeret someday. I talked about him during the Jace episode, like, ages ago. I talked about him a few episodes. I think the Venser episode, when he gave them their first guide, the Planeswalkers, when they arrived in New Phyrexia.
Okay.
So I will do an episode someday on everything he is, because he's an agent of Bolas, of Nicol Bolas, throughout a lot of it. So he's not a good guy. He's very much like I was kind of just saying, like, he's very much the mentality of, like, I'm strong, so I get things. You know, as long as I'm strong enough, I can keep taking stuff.
Well, his reaction to being oppressed by the mages was to become a mage and not change the structure of it. He was just like, oh man, that's a good life path. So it's he doesn't have, like, the you know, the wide-eyed optimism of, like, an actual hero.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just ambitious.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, ambitious. He's objectively pretty evil in a lot of the things that he does, but, you know, from circumstance, I guess. All we need to know about him is that he's a planeswalker. He's an extremely capable artificer, so he's known to work with machines and metals and things like that. And he eventually finds his way to New Phyrexia, where he was serving as an agent of Phyrexia. So he was serving the search for perfection. He was working for Bolas while he was on Phyrexia. So as soon as he got to Phyrexia, one of Bolas's agents, who was already there, gave him an injection, which made him immune to phyresis. So he was able to establish himself within the Phyrexian hierarchy without undergoing compliation at any point.
Interesting.
They're like, new human, here to work for the Phyrexians. Okay, well, it's a painful process, a lot of paperwork, if you know what I mean. You got to take a couple of these pills, so pop those bad boys in, and we'll get on with the next
step. With food, trust me.
Yeah. Take it with food.
He probably wouldn't have been evil if he didn't get a vaccine.
Yeah, maybe not, but maybe also. So his first encounter was with Jin Gataxius, the leader of the Progress Engine, who greeted him, led him to the core, where a surprise was waiting. So I don't know why Elspeth and Vesper and Koth didn't think to just ask Jin Gataxius, because apparently he just takes the new guys straight to the core. At the core, the silver golem Karn sat at the center of the plane, from where he was leading the Phyrexian compilation of Mirrodin.
Wait, what?
So, sometime after the death of Memnarch at the hands of Glissa, and you guys might remember that Memnarch had locked Karn out of the plane, right?
Yeah.
He changed the locks when his dad left.
Right, he painted the doors all on.
He painted what looked like a padlock on the doors, and Karn just never tried turning the handle.
Because robots can't see in 3D, so he couldn't have perceived that it was flat.
Exactly. So after Memnarch died, Karn was able to return to Phyrexia. Once he returned, however, it didn't take long before the glistening oil, which had gotten way out of control, happened to corrupt him as well.
Oh, he wasn't wearing a mask. See, kids,
exactly.
That's why it's fucking important. Even at the center of the earth, you gotta, if you're going to go out.
Don't listen to Jamie. He should have got his vaccine. slowly losing his mind due to the glistening oil, Karn became the father of machines and the leader of New Phyrexia. It was Karn himself who is the driving infestation of his former home. Karn created the Praetors, left them to complete the work that he had begun because he's going full on crazy and didn't have it in him to finish it. But he created the Praetors to do the work for him, essentially.
Oh, shit.
Tezzeret was like, okay, I can work with this. Crazy guy in charge? Sure. I've worked with Bolas before. I think I can handle an egomaniac. So he ingratiates himself to Karn until eventually he was one of his most trusted advisors next to Glissa and Geth. Geth, you guys might remember, was the guy who protected the Vault of Whispers. He was the first of the seven Steel Thanes that we talked about. He was one of the guys on the Bachelor trying to get with Sheoldred, the Whispering One, essentially.
Yeah.
So Geth, this guy, happened to be one of Karn's right-hand men. Glissa, who killed Memnarch and then was corrupted by Phyrexia eventually, also one of Karn's right-hand men. Tezzeret rises up. And these guys, it's kind of weird because the Seven Steel Thanes serve Sheoldred, the Whispering One, but at the same time, he's also their right-hand man. The writing is a fucking mess. And I think it's because, like, hey, they have a ton of books. A lot of them are written by different authors. And this one in particular, by a lot of the reviews I read and a lot of what I'm just reading trying to research this, it seems really disjointed with a lot of the other books. But now we're saying Geth, though he serves Sheoldred, the Whispering One, is also the right-hand man of the de facto leader of the Phyrexians, essentially. Who is a crazy guy who doesn't issue any commands and just kind of sits at the center of the plane. So Tezzeret's like, hey, I can help. I'm great at working with crazy people. So he manages to get a spot with Glissa and Geth next to Karn. But despite how he presents himself, Tezzeret has his own ambitions. He was content working for Karn, but he coveted Karn's position and was seeking to usurp him. So he's like,
I've earned my place at the center of the earth, going crazy. Exactly. I put in the hours.
I put in the hours. Exactly. So he was the one who was setting up the Phyrexians, or not the Phyrexians, sorry, the Planeswalkers, Elspeth, Koth, and Vesper with guides. As soon as they arrived on the plane, he was essentially like, well, here's a fucking opportunity. You know what I mean? He's like, they're going to get to the center of the earth. They're looking for Karn. They're going to get to the center of the earth, and they're going to see that he's gone crazy and that he can't be saved, and they'll kill him for me, you know? Do the dirty work for me.
Yeah.
So when
the reason I work hard is just to have other people kill my boss.
Exactly. Yeah. So when he sees that Glissa is hot on the trails of the Planeswalkers, he's like, you meddlesome fool, you're going to ruin everything. So he's like, okay, here's my opportunity to deal with them too. Like, if I'm shooting for the king, I better not miss. So it's time to knock out Glissa too. He sends his forces to intercept Glissa's forces. So as they're fleeing, the tunnel collapsed behind them. They got the pickaxe Phyrexian, they got the drill Phyrexian, and they got the bulldozer Phyrexian, all working hard on the collapsed tunnel.
All right.
Tezzeret sends his forces to attack Glissa's forces and try and wipe them out, essentially. So
I guess it's like a three-way war now between like three different forces. They're like, you've got the Phyrexians bringing up the rear with their bulldozer guy, then you've got Glissa coming down to fight with Tezzeret.
Yeah, it's like, imagine some sort of like crazy hypothetical where the CIA shows up in a free country and there is an actual coup already happening. Like, the CIA didn't set it up. There's actually one already going on. And they're just like, oh shit, okay, sure. So our agents in the field, Elspeth, Vesper, and Koth, are like, okay, we don't know why they're fighting back there, but the Phyrexians are fighting with each other. Let's take this opportunity, you know? We're near the core. Let's go. They got Malira with her. When they get to the core, they see Karn. They're like, oh shit, here's the guy. Found him. He doesn't look so good though. Corrupted by the Phyrexian oil, he was weakened and delirious. Malira, though, luckily, has her ability to heal Phoresis, right?
Oh, and he doesn't like have a traditional heart organ, right? So I don't know. It can't corrupt his soul, can it?
That's kind of the bad news, right? So he does have a Planeswalker spark. That was a gift from his father, Urza. This is when we find out that once the heart of a creature was corrupted by the disease, They become a true Phyrexian, and she didn't have the power to save them. It was beyond her means, so it was too late for Karn.
He's got Phyrexia. It's terminal.
Yeah. Malera, she cleansed his body of the corruption, but she can't get to the heart. It's beneath the ribcage, and magic can't go through ribcages.
They don't make water hot enough.
Exactly. So, left unattended, the Phyresis would always return to Karn, even if they could kind of clear his mind a bit. He'd never be himself again. He'd always be corrupted.
He'd have to go in for treatment like once a week, and he just doesn't have the time with his job in the center of the earth, you know?
However, Venser, the man who knew machines better than anyone else in the group, had an idea. He told the group about his sickness, about the radiation poisoning he's been dealing with for the past, you know, for a long time now. He's known about it. He knows that he's dying, and he knows that he's been dying for years. He's just been kind of keeping it to himself this whole time.
Yeah. I lied to you. I told you I was doing a bunch of cocaine, and that's why I was getting constant nosebleeds. But actually, I just wanted to be cool.
Venser, however, had the sneaking suspicion that his planeswalker spark would be enough to save Karn. So with the last of his strength, Venser gives up his life and his spark to Karn, which was indeed enough to cure the last of the infection in Karn's heart.
Oh, so he just like, he just kind of like dragon hearts it, basically, like that movie where he gives half his heart to, or he gives his heart to the other guy, and it just like knocks his old corrupted heart out.
Exactly. Cool. He's like, they go, they meet Karn, they're like, he's got a bad heart, you know, the rest of his body is perfectly disease free, but his heart just won't take it. And Venser's like, hey, I have something called phthisis, and that affects everything but the heart. All of my body is completely diseased, but my heart is beautifully clean. You could drink out of that heart. And
he like lifts up Karn's hood, which are of course his butt cheeks. He's just like, yeah, no, that's no good. So he clips like the jumper cables to the battery in there, and then up to his own nipples. Yeah, he's just like, this will work.
That's
Venser. Like, he was made out to be like the incel of the group, like kind of like the loser. But that's a pretty Chad move to give up your whole life for another.
For sure. Venser.
Every incel is a martyr. Like, if you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, incels are the true martyrs.
Oh my god,
Peter O'Donohue, 2021, baby.
They set the bar lower so normal guys like us could get laid.
And God bless him, because I wouldn't have a shot otherwise. Yeah. Could you imagine if men were just normal? How hard it would be to get a girl. Venser hooks his nipples up to Karn's butt. Gives him his planeswalker spark, and Karn's cured. He's cured. With healing comes lucidity, and lucid once more, Karn speaks with Elspeth, and they both agree that Karn, despite everything we've been through, they're both like, you know what, Karn, you're probably not strong enough to stop the Phyrexians, huh? And Karn's like, what? No, definitely not. Are you crazy? I couldn't stop all the Phyrexians. That's madness.
But he has Venser's heart now, so the first time he speaks to Elspeth, he's like, hey, so I saw you in science class, and I think we have something in common, and do you want to go on a date with me?
Yeah.
Oh. And when she said no, then he starts to act like an asshole.
No, he's like, oh, wow, you rescued me, huh? Yeah, well, I kind of lured them into my trap. I had them thinking that I was disabled, but I was actually, like, I'm incredibly powerful. I studied as a monk for a while, and, you know, watching YouTube tutorials has taught me how to use a sword quite well, so I was ready to break out of here at any moment, but it's good that you're here, because now I can protect you, Elspeth. And Elspeth is just like, leave me alone, dude. Malera's my girlfriend. He's like, fine, whatever, fuck you. Which is more true than you know, because this next part, as much as I have been as I was confused when I was researching this next part just made no fucking sense to me. This whole interaction made no fucking sense to me, where they journey to the center of the fucking earth. They travel across dimensions to travel to the center of a fucking world to rescue this guy, and then they're both like, yeah, no, you probably can't do anything, and he just like leaves. Like, I don't know. I didn't read the books, like I said, But every account that I read, again, is just like, he says, I have a lot more work to do, and then there's no more fucking mention of him in this book. So it's just like, he leaves, Elspeth and Koth end up making their stand. He tells them, you have to go remain with the Mirren Resistance, cure this plane of infection, no matter how long it takes. Is quote, no matter how long it takes, is what Karn says to them, and then he just fucks off. To do what? I don't know, because the next mention of him is like, yeah, he's like gallivanting about in another expansion on with some like pirates or something, and you're like, well, what the fuck, Karn? Where'd you go? It was wild to me.
It's like, yo, thanks for saving my life. Sorry about your buddy. Can I help? And they're like, no. He's like, never mind. Yeah. And then just disappears forever.
I don't know. So this is one of the times I'm going to invite our fans, anybody who's read the book, to tell me what the fuck happens here, because could not find it in my research. So he leaves. That much I know for sure. He leaves. He's gone. And he tells Elspeth and Koth, go fight the Phyrexians on Mirrodin. So they're like, okay. That's a tall order, because we gave up a lot of resources to get to this point. Yeah. Including like the planeswalker who just gave his life for you, you know, like the Mirren Resistance camp, which we abandoned to the Phyrexians to get here. Like, it's pretty high cost to saving you. So it's, you know, disappointing to say the least to hear you say that you're just going to leave. But okay, well,
yeah, $8 left. We cannot even afford to take the bus back to the surface.
Yeah, too. Exactly.
What's going on here?
So the war on New Phyrexia was a pathetic attempt. Elish Norn, the white praetor, was gaining an ever-increasing influence over the other praetors. Eventually, she seized complete dominion over Sheoldred and Urabrask's territories, so the black and red territories, which we kind of mentioned on a past episode. So this means that the humans who were once safe in the relatively, you know, big air quotes, safe in the Furnace Lair are now full-scale being attacked and complicated. So by the time Elspeth and Koth return, it's no longer like roving bands that decide, hey, let's have a go at the humans. It's now like an extermination campaign.
Okay.
The resistance was being wholly slaughtered. In a last-ditch effort, the remaining forces decided they were going to strike at the Phyrexian hierarchy. They were like, you know what? Maybe we can't take out the ceaseless tides of soldiers, but if we can cut the head off the snake, maybe we can deal with it. So, through whatever means, they learned that there was going to be a meeting of the praetors. All the praetors were going to group together and be like, Urabrask, what the fuck, dude? Why were you fucking harboring, you know, people who are actively seeking to destroy our way of life in your fucking furnace? Koth and Elspeth are like, okay, that's our chance. That's our chance to hit all the generals. You know what I mean? We've got Koth, so or we've got Karn, so Karn's not going to be the driving force anymore. Now it's just the praetors. Now it's just Elish Norn. And Koth is like, hey, you know who showed me how to make a bomb? Venser. He didn't do it great. I can make a better one, but I'm going to build a big bomb, and let's take it there to the Marriott at Mirrodin and the conference center and just blow them all the fuck up. The plan would go awry pretty much as soon as they started. They're like, they get there, and sure enough, the Marriott, the hotel staff, is not humans like they expected, but indeed Phyrexians, who are like, so who did you say you're here to visit? They're like, we're here to bomb. And so like all the alarms go off. You know,
the Phyrexians.
Yeah.
Phyrexians in the shape of that doorway that you have to walk through the metal detector.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Yes. Sweating profusely. So the attacking forces just throw themselves into a meat grinder. Whatever Mirren resistance was left, and like they were being wholesale slaughtered, so they had to try something, but this weren't it, you know? They throw themselves into a meat grinder. They're all but wiped out, or really they're just wiped out, because at the end there's only Elspeth and Koth left out of all human life, all organic life on the plane. There's Elspeth and Koth left, cutting down endless hordes of Phyrexians coming their way. But they too were losing strength, because as we've seen before, you know, you know, there's only so many holes in a boat you can plug. You've only got 10 fingers, right?
Yeah. So,
Koth.
Is that how you fix a boat?
Yeah.
You stick your finger in it?
Stick your finger in the hole.
Yeah.
The what is it? The boy with his finger in the dike or something? Maybe I should have said the dike instead of the dike. Okay. That's an expression, though, okay? Like, yeah, I'm not talking about lesbians.
We're talking about dams, Peter.
The
dam.
So Koth, he erects some rudimentary defenses, and he's like, I still got my bomb. You know, I'm ready to blow these fuckers up.
Oh, that's true. They didn't even get to use it because they got caught by security when they didn't think of a lie. Yeah.
He's ready to sacrifice himself to set off the bomb. It's like, hey, we built this bomb, but the only way to detonate it is to hold your finger on the button while it blows up. But he's like, there's no reason that Elspeth should die too, right? Why do we both need to go for this? This is my home plane.
We really only need one finger on the button. It's okay. You could leave. And exactly. they're like crossed over on it.
That's it. And he's like, I got 10 fingers. So enough to fill 10 holes in a boat.
I can put two.
Enough for 10 dikes.
Yeah. Something like that. So he tells her to go. But she doesn't budge because I guess she's white aligned. She's like, nah, I'm just going to die with you. It's cool, dude.
Yeah.
So he uses his magic. His magic is earth shaping and metal shaping. He's a metal bender.
Geomancy.
Exactly. So he opens up a big hole in the ground underneath her, and she falls into it, and then he closes the hole back up on top of her. That shields her from the blast, and then he sets off the blast, essentially. So he's
okay. There is a lot of Looney Tunes in this episode, honestly. The whole, like, he just, like, throws a drawing of a hole under her feet and then picks it up afterwards.
Yeah. She only falls whenever she looks down and notices that she's not standing on anything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, like, her hat stays above her head the whole time and then goes down after her.
Yeah, so he throws her into the hole. He sets off the blast. She's protected for a while, but she's not content with leaving just yet. Until some Phyrexian forces break through the shield. Something called the Phyrexian Obliterator grievously injures her. And finally, she's like, you know what? I gotta go. There's nothing more I can do. I did everything I could. In a half-lucid state, she planeswalks away, incapacitated and delirious from her near-fatal wounds. Where does she end up? Where do you guys think?
Does she end up back on Bant? Did she just like hit the recall button and head home? Does she respawn at base?
Pete's saying Bant.
She,
do you have any ideas?
She ends up, she falls into a forest and there's a bunny leaning against a tree.
Yeah,
and he's chewing on a rabbit. Chewing a carrot, yeah. Rabbit, yeah.
And he goes, what's up, planeswalker? When she awoke, she was on Theros, the first plane she had ever planeswalked to. First place we ever heard about her when we were doing the Xenagos episode.
Yeah.
And that's Elspeth's quest for Karn Phyrexian arc. We know from the Xenagos episode that Phyrexia does invade Theros, which we talked about on the Xenagos episode a bit. So if you're keen on hearing where she goes next, I'd say go listen to that episode, the Xenagos episode. Similarly, she has an entire, quite an in-depth arc on Theros, which is like the Greek mythology plane, where she becomes Elspeth after death. She journeys into like the underworld to kill some people, rescue some people, other things. So maybe we'll pick up the Elspeth thread again at some point. I don't know if I'll do it for my next episode. I don't know if I'll do Tezzeret or maybe Glissa for next episodes. I'm going to get off the direct railroad train route that we've been on for the past little while with these Phyrexian episodes. But I hope you enjoyed listening. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. If you like the show, please leave us a review. It'd mean the world to us. It's seriously the best way for the Google robots to show our show to new people. If you're not keen on leaving a review, maybe just tell people that you like the show. You know, buy some merch, wear it proudly, loudly, and proudly. It's so cool to see you guys supporting the show in all the amazing ways that you do. So thank you to everybody who listened. Pete, do you got stuff you want to plug into those gaps?
Yeah, I got some spare fingers.
You got some fingers you want to plug into those holes?
I got a couple of fingers for at least a couple of plugs here. So there's, of course, @LoreBoysPodcast on Instagram. And on the subject of merch, we did a mailbag episode, which I don't know when anyone's going to hear, but there was a good gag given to us by Bison and Darnell.
Okay, this was... You're you're burying the lead here because it never came up on the episode. It came up when we were drunkenly playing Jackbox well after the episode finished.
I mean, I was fucking
with everybody in our Discord.
So I don't remember a fucking thing.
It's a great reason to catch our Twitch streams because sometimes we play with viewers afterwards.
Yeah, catch our Twitch streams and join the Discord because we just like stop the Twitch stream. We're like, fuck it, let's go play Jackbox on Discord. So.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a great t-shirt there that's looking to give you some eternal life. It's Titty Make Me Immortal. And if you want to check that out, that is out today, March 10th, 2021.
What was it? Shout out to Bison for the slogan and Darnell for the artwork, I think.
Vice versa, I think.
I will bring that up. Bison for the art, Darnell for the slogan.
There you go.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can find me on Steam at JAYMILK. I got a cool game called Bad Rats from Jester that I played before the show, and it was basically fantastic contraption.
We were playing on the soundtrack pretty much. It's like a racist fantastic contraption with some like murdering of innocent animals, basically. So thank you. I was really
hoping to like microwave a cat or bomb a cat or
it's always kill a cat.
Kill a cat.
I was really hoping I could get in there and plug for you because I knew what your plug was going to be, Jamie. It's always the same thing. Buy me Video Bame.
Well, I didn't say buy me video games. I said that's my tag.
He got his Video Bame already. True. He's got to beat Bad Rats first.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, once Jamie 100% Bad Rats, then he will reopen his Steam profile to receive more video games.
I won't turn him down.
Thanks everyone so much for listening. If you want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. If you have a podcast app that you're listening to us on, usually there's just a link built into the app. I know Podcast Addict has it. I assume Apple Podcasts has it, but I don't know that for sure. I don't know an iPhone.
Thank you, Zavy, XAVY, their new patron, as of yesterday, by the way.
Yeah.
And Caleb as well, unless that's the
same person. Yeah.
I see.
Thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Caleb. Not to be confused with other Caleb, who was half the creator of the Titty Make Me Immortal t-shirt. Anyone who doesn't trust Patreon doesn't trust big Patreon. We do have Lore Boys Prime, a service that we always offer. And let me tell you guys, we've been working on something very exciting for Lore Boys Prime. We have developed a technology that will let you throw a hole underneath your friends for them to fall into. It's rife for pranks. It's rife for if you ever wanted to create a YouTube video that would make you tens of thousands of dollars where you would give a homeless man $100 and then throw a hole under him that he would fall into. This is the perfect invention for you. So everybody who signs up for Lore Boys Prime will receive one two-dimensional hole that they can toss at their friends, their enemies, their lovers, in the bedroom. Can be great for a bit of comic relief in the bedroom.
Which, that's what people are looking for. It's comic relief.
It just gets so serious. You know what I mean? There's all that crying. The hole is too big to plug with your finger. You might need all 10 for this one, fellas. So keep them at the ready.
Whoopee cushion under the pillow, maybe?
Yeah.
What else can we get comic relief in the bedroom?
A false nose, you know, like one of those. You have a nose on and you pretend like they rip your nose off at some point during the lovemaking. Well, because, you know, the lovemaking, she's tugging on your nose for a bit. You have a false nose that comes right off. So for a split second, she thinks she pulled it off.
If you have a fake nose hand, you can get the comical like thump when it like breaks off when you're like warming her up. Drink some heavy if your hand breaks off.
You know, it's a really good one. Red food coloring up the dick hole, because then when you come, it looks like blood.
Yeah. And then you can just like, hey Siri, play Cannibal Corpse, and just get that song blasting.
Slap the butt with one of those long, stretchy hands that stick to things.
Like the gecko.
And that's gonna fucking constitute a lore boy.
Lore boys.
Out. I was a little low on that sound check, so I started up a new one with myself turned up. My name's Ethan. If I had a pet lizard, I would name him Tails, like the fox from Sonic.
If I had a pet lizard, I would name him Komodo Hype.
Like the emote. The emote that is now PogChamp.
Exactly. I was going to call him PogChamp, but I figured let's just go straight to it.
But then what if my name is Peter, but then I'd be worried, like, what if your lizard is QAnon?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the real PogChamp.
Jamie, does your lizard support the storming of the Capitol building?
Yeah, to free the children in the basement? And what about the mole men?
Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, I was going to say, this is good for the soundtrack. My name is Peter. I just bought Deep Rock Galactic after trying out Ethan's family sharing and having it click for me within about 25 minutes. I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be neat.
My name's Ethan. I've never killed Kel'Thuzad, but I do sometimes kill old people that remind me of Kel'Thuzad that I meet on the street.
I got Kel'Thuzad to 8%, and it was kind of heartbreaking. We were there. We could taste it. We taste his undead bones in our mouth.
Oh, that's
some, like,
undead bones.
Really good edging. I'm on the last boss of Blasphemous on New Game Plus now, which I guarantee they made easier. I 100% do not believe that I could get this far because I couldn't before.
Sure.
And
Pete doesn't believe in personal growth at all.
No, exactly.
not in practice, not in principle.
But the second to last boss is easily the hardest one in the game. And even on my first attempt, it took me like 4 or 5 tries to beat her. Even on my first attempt, I was getting her down to like 10, 15% HP. So I know exactly what it is like to get blueballed hard, especially this weekend.
He's got small dick energy, if I've ever met a guy with small dick energy.
Ben Shapiro, I wouldn't say has small dick energy as much as he has dry wife's pussy energy.
Oh, yeah. Because he couldn't even say, when he was doing the WAP review, he couldn't even say it. Imagine if he encountered one in real life.
Well, he tweeted back at wet ass pussy or whatever, being like, are you sure that's not a medical condition? So then everybody's like, has your wife never been wet, kind of thing?
Dog.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, my wife says.
Self own.
In the tweet, he was like, my wife, who's a doctor, says that it's not normal to have a wet pussy. It's like, ooh, Christ, yeah. Buddy. Ooh, I fucking hate you as a person, and even I feel bad.
Yeah, that goes beyond. It transcends cell phone.
Yeah.
It's just, he went back in time and killed his own parents.
Yeah, like, exactly. What, something back in time fucked his mother. I don't know.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.